Our next case is United States against Mitchell. Here for Mr. Lieberman.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. I'm Michael Lieberman, appearing on behalf of DeAndre Mitchell, as I did in the District Court. Your Honors, it's our position in this case that Mr. Mitchell did everything that can be required of anybody to get credit under the sentencing guidelines for acceptance of responsibility, and the District Court therefore clearly erred in denying him that reduction. It is, I guess, to address an argument that the government makes in its brief in opposition head-on, the sentence that was imposed, we acknowledge, was in fact within both ranges. And Judge Shabazz could have granted Mr. Mitchell the reduction that he earned and still imposed the same sentence. The problem for this court is there's no way to know what Judge Shabazz would have done had he not erred on the legal issue, because he made that error. And it would have been a different guideline range, and therefore different sentences would have been within that other range.
But there's another point that the government brings out. I guess it's in the PSR. Doesn't the FBI report reflect that, not that Mr. Mitchell could not recall the name of the individual, but he would not identify the individual? Those are two dramatically different positions if you're thinking about acceptance of responsibility.
Correct, Your Honor. And to that, I think we, not explicitly but by inference, we address that argument in our opening brief by discussing this court's opinions in Hammock and Larkin. And the difference between this case and those cases, which I submit is significant, is in both of those cases where this court found that the district court correctly denied credit for acceptance of responsibility, the defendants made affirmative lies. They affirmatively lied to law enforcement. In Larkin, Mr. Larkin affirmatively said that the drugs came from somebody else, when his wife then later admitted that they came from her.
Well, but let me just interject here. There's no doubt that it's sufficient to deny acceptance of responsibility if the defendant is out there making affirmative lies, but it's not necessary. I mean, there are plenty of cases that say acceptance of responsibility is in some sense a broader issue than that, and the judge, one of the reasons we give people a sentencing break is if they've accepted responsibility, you don't think they're as likely to go out and do bad things. They don't need as much deterrence, what have you. And I'm not familiar with any case that says unless you've affirmatively lied, the court can give you, or the court must give you, acceptance of responsibility.
And you're correct, Your Honor, and I'm not suggesting that the law requires an affirmative lie. What I'm saying is Larkin and Hammock examined the interrelationship between relevant conduct and the offense of conviction. And it's clear that a defendant does not have to volunteer evidence of relevant conduct. The only thing a defendant cannot do is affirmatively lie or frivolously contest relevant conduct. When it goes to the elements of the offense of conviction, the defendant is required to acknowledge all elements. Where the metal that the knife came, the metal came from to make the knife, is not an element of the offense. And under Judge Shabazz's reasoning and, by extension, the government's argument, had Mr. Mitchell never been asked, had nobody ever asked him where the knife came from or where the metal came from, and he simply did not affirmatively volunteer that as part of his plea colloquy, I believe that Judge Shabazz's analysis would have been the same.
But, you know, here, relevant conduct, of course, is a term of art under the sentencing guidelines. And I don't think anybody's saying that information about the identity of where the knife came from was, quote, relevant conduct in the sense of, you know, the extra 10 kilos of cocaine you dealt with might have been relevant conduct. It's part of the story of the offense that he was convicted for. And, you know, granted, not an element of the offense. The government doesn't have to go there and prove, well, here's the chain of custody of this knife. But part of the story of the offense. So I'm not sure it should be treated for acceptance of responsibility purposes over on the relevant conduct branch of things as opposed to information about the offense. That's a question. I mean, you know, it's an issue, but I don't think it's – I agree with you it's not relevant conduct, but I'm not sure how far that gets us.
Well, you know, I guess, and again, to go back to Larkin, and what this court said in Larkin was when a case involves introduction of contraband into a prison, the identity of the person who introduces the contraband is that's part of the complete untangling of the offense. That was a case where the evidence was undisputed that the contraband was coming from outside the prison and being brought into the prison. The entire event from beginning to end was illegal.
Why does that matter if, I mean, why isn't it still part of unraveling the whole story of the offense if it's from within the prison? The prison certainly has a strong interest in knowing about, you know, which light fixtures can be turned into knives or whatever.
Agreed, Your Honor. But in this case, it was under the evidence that was presented in the pre-sentence report, and I would submit it wasn't even evidence presented. There was no, it was a pre-sentence report. The evidence was that somebody gave metal to Mr. Mitchell. The knife was also wrapped in tape, so I guess by the same analysis, the prison would have an interest in knowing where the tape came from, or how did he get access to the buffer, or where did the box come from that he put the shank in. There's all sorts of evidence that undoubtedly the prison would like to have information about that doesn't mean that because Mr. Mitchell doesn't tell them about it that he's not accepting responsibility.
Well, that's where I want to get back to this other thing. If they ask him, where did you get the buffer, and he says, I'm not telling, they might regard it as the same kind of lack of cooperation as asking him who is the person you got the knife from, and he would not, if the would not identify story is the correct one.
Well, Your Honor, I think your question raises a couple of interesting issues. One is, if the would not is the correct, we don't know which is the correct because that was never explored because the government never presented any evidence on that because the government agreed that he did accept responsibility. I also think it's significant that Judge Shabazz himself and the probation officer and the United States attorney at no time during the plea, pre-sentence investigation, or sentencing in this case thought it important enough to ask Mr. Mitchell where that came from. Yes, prison authorities asked him, he said what he said, and that's where it was left. He was never again given the opportunity when being told how important it was to give that answer. If Judge Shabazz thought it was important, he could and should have asked the question. Now, the other point I want to make, and I don't want to overstate this, but if the court goes through and carefully reads the sentencing transcript, which is attached to our brief, it's clear that perhaps Judge Shabazz was concerned about the not telling or not being able to remember. Judge Shabazz, I would submit, was equally concerned with what he termed the tricks that the public defender, namely me, was trying to play on the court. And I think reviewing the transcript, if this is important to the court, it is impossible for this court on this record to unravel whether Judge Shabazz's reason was that Mr. Mitchell couldn't identify the source or whether Judge Shabazz's reason was because the pre-sentence report was sloppy and nobody brought it to his attention and I asked to have the sentencing moved up before that could all be aired. At a minimum, I believe the case has to be sent back to Judge Shabazz for clarification on that point.
You're in your rebuttal time.
Your Honor, with that, I will reserve. Thank you.
Mr. O'Shea?
Good morning. Tim O'Shea for the United States. The district court was not clearly erroneous for three different reasons. The source of the contraband, that 10-inch long piece of metal, clearly is part of the circumstances surrounding the offense. Number two, the defendant failed to identify the source of that contraband, and in doing so failed to provide, as this court has held, the district court can require a person to provide the full unraveling of the circumstances concerning the offense. The district court was also not clearly erroneous in finding that the defendant was trying to cover up the source of the metal. After all, the defendant indicated that he obtained either the metal as a completed knife or as just a 10-inch long piece of metal just 3 months before he was caught with it. And the defendant...
Do you regard that three... I mean, you mentioned that a number of times in your brief. Do you regard that as, let's say, a credibility ruling by Judge Shabazz and the alternative on the could not recall part of Mr. Mitchell's account?
Yes.
And he says he couldn't recall, and yet it's only 3 months, and he also then the other account says he would not identify.
Right, right. That's the other thing. You got the two contradictory statements, Your Honor. It's a 10-inch long knife, and it's a big deal in the prison. I respectfully submit that the judge would not be crazy in thinking that the inmate was pulling his leg a little bit when he said he couldn't remember where he got it. You know, that's a normal credibility call that district court judges make all the time. You know, the opportunity is another thing. The district court judge the burden's on the defendant to show that he's entitled to acceptance of responsibility. And in the district court judge...
I thought you agreed he had. Trial level.
I wasn't there, Your Honor. One of my colleagues, Dave Reinhardt, was. If I was a district court judge, defendant Mitchell definitely would have gotten acceptance of responsibility.
No. I thought the government agreed he had cooperated.
We did. Well, not cooperating, but that it was entitled to the acceptance.
There's a time, then why does he have a burden then? Everybody agrees that he's entitled to it.
Well, not the person sitting up on the bench. And it is really, the question is whether the district court judge's determination, not my colleague's determination, not Mr.
I know, Lieberman's. But it seems to me that once the government takes the position he has cooperated, it's a little unnerving for him to step up here and say that it was his burden to prove he had. Yeah, he already agreed he had. Why should he get involved?
Yeah. If I were the finder of fact, then I think it would be a more glaring thing. But I'm not the finder of fact. The district court judges.
Mm.
And it's the judge's call, not mine, whether he's met that burden.
Yeah.
But when the judge, I think what Judge Bauer is suggesting is when the judge, in a sense, reopens the issue, because, you know, normally you don't spend a lot of time putting evidence in the record if everybody's happy and it's all agreed to.
Right.
So he may not have realized he had to come forward with additional testimony, additional whatever he might have had. The judge reopens it. He certainly has every right to do.
Right.
Maybe there's a problem with the development of the record.
Yeah.
When he reopened it, why didn't he ask him? Where did it come from?
Well,
He reopens it just by saying, I don't believe you don't remember, so boom.
If it was that way, I think we'd have more of a problem. Remember that Judge Shabazz said, look, I'm going to call it. I'm going to give you an opportunity for an adjournment. If you want, we can call a timeout. Remember the judge said, so everybody can get their ducks in order.
What ducks do we have to get in order? Everybody agrees he's entitled to reduction.
Everybody but the judge.
And he didn't say that.
He
didn't say that.
The context of the district court's offering the adjournment so everybody could get their ducks in order, it really had to be only related to this.
Can you tell me
what
duck is out of line is probably the next question. What duck do I have to get in there?
Which one of the ducks in the prison gave Mr. Mitchell the 10-inch long piece of metal? That's what the judge wanted to know.
Did he say that?
Did the judge say that? Yeah. He said he thought there was a cover-up, and he thought that was the problem. And he gave him a chance to take an adjournment.
Well, it's a fairly broad thing. Well, okay, go ahead. I understand your position.
That's about it. I mean, the judge didn't give him an opportunity to straighten it out.
Position, the judge made it clear before he said you can take an adjournment that what his problem was about this statement about the identity of the source.
Right. And I wish the government or the defense had grabbed that opportunity. It slipped by. And that was it. I'm sorry, Your Honor. Well, I thought there was a question. Either way, you know.
If you want me to ask one, I will.
Sure, no.
I'm not saying that the government should confess error in cases like this, but it seems like when the probation department says you're entitled to acceptance of responsibility, the government says you're entitled to acceptance of responsibility. If the judge sees it differently, why do you vigorously defend that?
You don't care.
Why should you care? Either goes back or not. Who cares?
Yeah.
I don't see any hope in the world here that if it were to go back, that the sentence would be anything different than what it is.
I think you're right about that.
Yeah, I'm positive. Right about that.
But, you know, it's not... The question isn't whether my office agrees or agrees with the probation or all that. At this level, the only question is whether it's the district court was clearly erroneous. And look, you know, I've stood here on a number of occasions where I disagreed with Judge Ibanez, and I would have disagreed with him here. But, you know, it's just a question whether the district court is clearly erroneous. It's not my job to care or not care, Judge Evans. I mean, you know, as the court says, if you send it back,
recognizing his honor is filled with the milk of human kindness, and we'll go over backwards to give somebody a break.
Well, if there are no other questions, I thank you for your time and indulgence.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. Mr. Lieberman, how much time? You've got a minute left.
What do you think the odds are if we send it back that he's going to get a different sentence? Academically,
probably not good, but but I'm not sure that's the
concern.
In the real world, what's the chance?
Well, if you send it back, he'll be in a different guideline range, Your Honor. And
but the number isn't the same. It's 30 as either one, because the top of one or the bottom of the other.
Understood, but this court
said... This is an advisory guideline system we're operating under, so there just is no chance here, is there?
Well, Your Honor, I'm not in the prediction business.
Unless we're sending it back to Judge Crabb or something like that.
But the Supreme Court said in Booker, and this court affirmed in Dean, that the first step of the analysis is the guidelines still have to be properly calculated. In this case, they weren't. It was clear error. And what happens on remand happens on remand.
Any error is subject to harmless error analysis here in guideline range calculations.
And, Your Honor, I would disagree that it's clearly harmless. It's a different guideline range. It's a different day, and it could be a different result. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We'll take the case under advisement.